This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest with me, Sumitra, Sue Ann, and Xiaoyik, who has our second story of the afternoon.
Yes, so sand seems to be everywhere around us, literally in its raw form and as a material in many of the objects in our everyday lives. But scientists and environmentalists have been sounding the alarm about sand for several years now. Namely, we are running out of the stuff.
Yeah, so it sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? Yes. It's all around us.
There's plenty of it.
Yes. It is. And you consider that the beaches, the deserts are all filled with sand. But sand is the most consumed natural resource on the planet next to water. Mm. And look how well we're doing when it comes to conserving water.
Absolutely, yep.
So people actually use some 50 billion tons of aggregate every year. So aggregate essentially is the combination of sand and gravel. And obviously, if you're extracting 50 billion tons of a natural resource every year, the cumulative impact on the planet is going to be very severe.
Mm. Funny how I don't think about sand as a natural resource.
Yes, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm glad you put that in, because now it's really made me think. Mm. But what do we know about sand, right? It is a naturally occurring granular material that contains rock-forming minerals. There's desert sand, which have smooth and rounded grains as they're very constantly eroded by wind. Yep. So those can't be used for making concrete because they can't lock together to form stable concrete. But then there's the sand that's found in beds, banks and floodplains of rivers, as well as in lakes and at the seashore. These grains are more angular and are used to make concrete. Yes, I remember them being more angular because they're far more uncomfortable when they get into your bathing suit.
Absolutely, yeah.
So this distinction between the smooth desert sand and the angular sand that you get by rivers is an important distinction, because it helps us understand why the UN says the world is running out of sand.
Yeah, so as you've mentioned, Sumitra, a lot of the sand that we harvest is used to make concrete. Mm. And rapid urbanization all around the world demands that we harvest more and more sand so that we are able to construct the buildings and roads to accommodate the 4.2 billion people living in urban areas today. Mm. And this number is growing. The UN predicts that there will be another 2.5 billion people living in urban areas in the next 3 decades. So imagine how much more sand we're going to need just for the construction to sustain these populations.
Mm. And besides the construction as well, we also have land reclamation, and that uses a great amount of sand. So whether it's in California, China, Nigeria, Singapore, even right here in our own backyard in Malaysia, we're piling up sand in coastal areas to extend our shorelines and thus create land where there was none before.
Mm. And don't forget that apart from construction and land reclamation, the tech industry also uses a lot of high purity silica sands, right? Mm-hmm. They're used to make glass, solar panels, and even computer chips.
And the very computer screens that we're looking at in the studio right now, unfortunately. So where does all this sand come from? And as you mentioned, Sumitra, it doesn't occur to you that it's a natural resource, and it's a finite resource in a sense. Where do we get it from? Well, we strip riverbeds and beaches bare. We tear up farmlands and forests. We dredge up millions of tons of sand from the seafloor each year. And let's not forget, Malaysia is equally culpable. We are doing all of these sand mining activities as well. So to get a local perspective on this, I spoke earlier to S. Mageswari. She's the Honorary Secretary of Sahabat Alam Malaysia. And here she is telling us about the sand trade and sand mining activities in Malaysia.
Okay, in terms of the demand for sand, it is mostly for a wide range of sectors, including production of glass, electronics and aeronautics. However, in Malaysia, its largest use is in construction and land reclamation. And in Malaysia, the extraction of sand is commonly from the river, floodplain, channels and offshore sand mining, which also conflicts with other resources, natural resources such as fisheries. And in terms of the production itself, data from Mineral and Geoscience Department states that about 35 million tons of sand was produced in 2014. In 2015, the production was about 40.5 million tons, and it increased by 11% in 2016 to nearly 45 million tons. So right now, we are concerned that the extraction rate could be exceeding the natural sand replenishment rate in Malaysia. In terms of trade, the Malaysian government, they had banned the export of sea sand. Last year, there was an announcement that this ban has been put in place to cut down on illegal sand mining and also to protect Malaysia's oil lines. And they also want to ensure that there's enough supply of sea sand to satisfy domestic demand. If you can see, there's a lot of reclamation activities all around Malaysia happening, and the government wants to ensure there's enough supply of sea sand. But then there is also an issue where Malaysia is still exporting river sand by giving out approved permits. And then over the years, media has also exposed illegal sand mining activities. In, for example, in 2010, it was reported that the MACC is on a nationwide hunt for sand thieves. The sand thieves have like raked in billions of ringgit, and there's also have been issue of exporting sand under the guise of silica. You see, in terms of, as I mentioned earlier on, river sand exports have been banned, and right now sea sand has been banned, but then there are also the sand mafia who is exporting the sand under the guise of silica.
Yeah, and unfortunately, all these sand mining activities are destroying natural environmental resources and the life that depends on these resources. Yeah. So Maheswari also described the environmental impact of sand mining.
And in terms of, there are also a lot of environmental impacts. In terms of the environmental impact of river sand mining, which we have already experienced during our surveys, we find there's downstream erosion and there's also related impact to the erosion. It causes damage to infrastructure, public property, bridges, and also loss of farmland. We have heard complaints from villagers that their lands have been eroded by the rivers. And due to the sand mining, there's also modification of the habitat, aquatic habitat, including nursery grounds, spawning beds for fish, and the habitat for shellfish, and also the near the river banks, the riparian habitat. And another pollution issue is degradation of water quality, including increased turbidity, reduced light penetration, and also resuspension of organic or toxic materials. And we also had come up with a publication titled The Impacts of Coastal Reclamation in Malaysia, which outlines the impacts of sea sand mining and also dredging operation on the coastal ecosystem. This includes the loss of the marine benthic ecosystems such as coral reefs, seagrass meadows and mudflats, and also the destruction of buffer zone. And in terms of that, subsequently, the disruption of the food chain and coastal water pollution.
Yeah, and, you know, apart from what Maheswari has described, if you look at what's happening in other countries, the environmental impact of ocean dredging is so severe that it has damaged coral reefs in Kenya, in the Persian Gulf, and in Florida and the United States, for instance. It tears up, literally tears up marine habitats and muddies the waters with sand plumes that can then affect aquatic life far from the original site of the dredging.
I've seen that,
Yeah. And, you know, if we come back to our region again, fishermen in Malaysia and Cambodia have seen their livelihoods completely decimated by dredging. And in China, land reclamation has wiped out coastal wetlands, annihilated habitats for fish and shorebirds, and increased water pollution, as we've described.
It's really something that you don't really think about. When you think about the impact, the environmental impact in the sea, on the coral reefs, you usually think of climate change first of all. But now realizing that sand dredging is also a major cause of this. And going back to river sand mining, it's even contributing to the slow disappearance of Vietnam's Mekong Delta. It's estimated that nearly half of the delta will be wiped out by the end of this century as it's not being naturally replenished.
I was pretty horrified to read that the black market activity goes further to actually threaten innocent lives. In parts of Latin America and Africa, children are forced to work as virtual slaves in sand mines. And the sand mafia, are willing to kill anyone who gets in their way, including activists, police, and journalists.
So, you know, when you hear, and we constantly read about illegal mining activities taking place in Malaysia. So a very important question that I felt I really had to ask Maheswari was, how do we regulate sand mining activities in our country?
Okay, in terms of our regulation, natural resources such as sand, land, water, it all falls under the purview of the state government. So thus, river and inland sand mining is under the jurisdiction of the state government, and the permits are given by the district land office. Offshore sand mining, which is mining in the sea, is under the jurisdiction of the federal government. There is a river sand mining management guideline, which was produced by the Drainage and Irrigation Department. Although there is this guideline, there are many administrative issues. Among them, the approval or permit, which is given by the land office, sometimes it does not fulfill DID's technical requirement. And then the volume of sand that can be allowed to be mined, it cannot be specified effectively because they don't know how much of sand can be extracted from a certain river. And then they also cannot determine the suitability for extraction. It is most of the time it's not technically evaluated. There can be an operator who says, okay, I want to mine sand from here, and then a permit is given. And then there are also technical conditions which are not adhered to by the operators. Even if it's a legal operation, there could be also illegal activities when they're extracting more than they're allowed to. Yeah. So, and then there's also the problem of monitoring. We are not sure how effective the monitoring is working. So there is also an issue of mining operations. And then there's also the issue of sand mining operations, which are being carried out without approval or permit, sand theft happening. Some of these sand operators, they are backed by gangsters and thugs. So the authorities themselves must come up with a solution to this enforcement issue.
Mm-hmm. And illegal sand mining is clearly rampant in Malaysia, going by the news reports that we see. And it's no wonder as well. It's a lucrative trade considering our huge thirst for sand due to construction projects, reclamation projects.
Constant construction at that.
Yep. And so how long will it be until we run out of sand?
So according to filmmaker Dennis Delestrike, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but he made an award-winning documentary called Sand Wars back in 2013. He has found out that it takes, or he's asked scientists, and it takes 20,000 years for the natural process of sand formation.
Wow.
It's a very complicated process. It begins in the mountains, involves the slow erosion of rocks all the way down before it's finally carried into rivers and streams and into the ocean. Mm-hmm. So the United Nations Environment Programme, you know, in that light, the UNEP says that sand mining greatly exceeds natural renewal rates, and in fact is increasing exponentially. So, you know, Suyen, you asked a hypothetical question, but, you know, you also mentioned earlier about how well or, you know, badly we're doing when it comes to conserving water.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's actually really possible to run out of sand. So my final question to Mageswari was whether sand mining can actually be sustainable, especially looking here in Malaysia.
Okay, in terms of the impact of reclamation, where the huge amount of sand is needed. For example, I can give you in terms of the Penang South Reclamation proposed project where three islands will be created. This involves about 4,500 acres of land, and it is estimated that they need 189 million cubic meters of sand and rock for that particular project. So there is a lot of environmental impact, and we don't think that sand mining can be sustainable. So what we are calling for is we need to reduce the consumption, avoid unnecessary natural sand consumption in construction. And there's a need to stop wasteful use of sand, for instance, for luxury projects and the coastal reclamation projects. So for instance, you see, in terms of biodiversity resources, there is like a call for sustainable use and rational use. So we also need to treat sand as a finite and limited resource, and alternatives need to be found. We have also done a lot of research on in terms of the alternatives. A UNEP document recommends that one way to reduce consumption of sand is to optimize the use of existing buildings and infrastructure. And then there is also some areas where they are using recycled building and quarry dust material to substitute for sand. So the concrete rubble can also be recycled to avoid using sand and aggregate. But this is for low-quality users. And there are some countries where they're recycling glass bottles. This also can reduce the consumption of sand. A lot of research needs to be done on the alternatives for sand.
So that was S. Mageswari. She's the honorary secretary for Sahabat Alam Malaysia. She's done a lot of work going down to the ground to communities that are affected by sand mining activities. And, you know, some of the methods that she has pointed out to sort of reduce our use of our dependence on sand. It does make me think, though, that at the end of the day, those are small band-aid measures, aren't they, for this huge demand that, that we are putting out there and needing to literally vacuum up tons, megatons of sand.
Actually, what she mentioned about the recycling of glass is really interesting. I've always found it difficult to recycle glass.
Yes, apparently here in Malaysia or perhaps within the Klang Valley.
They're not as willing
to
take on glass for some reason. And you know, it should be something that should be easily recycled. So on that note, scientists are also working on ways to replace sand in concrete with other materials, including fly ash, which is a material left over by coal-fired power stations, shredded plastic even, and even crushed oil palm shells and rice husks. I dare say our Honourable Minister, Primary Industries, will be happy to hear about that.
Adding on to the downstream use of palm oil, I hope.
Absolutely. Yeah. So really, when it comes to the rapid rate of construction and land reclamation, it's easy to ask, right, is it time for us to draw a line in the sand?
Yeah, and obviously the rhetoric is, yes, we must conserve the use of sand, we must reduce our dependence, but really, just take a look around us in our city, in our country. Are we addicted to this need for just the development and spreading the mark of urbanization? I don't know.
And I wonder, you know, what you said earlier on about as consumers, whether changes we make to our behaviour in terms of perhaps, like, for example, not buying as many items in glass bottles, whether that would actually make a difference, whether we should get into the habit of, I don't know, refilling rather than buying new glass bottles.
And I guess that's another part to think of, right? Because when you go out and you buy drinks, for example, you don't want to buy them in plastic bottles anymore. And
At first, glass seems like the right alternative.
Yeah, but then now when you think about it, that may not necessarily be the best alternative either. So it's a lot of different factors to take into account. But I guess if you have one glass bottle, like you said, Sumitra, we can take that and refill it.
Yes, possibly.
Every little bit helps.
Yeah, and thank you. Thank you for putting this notion in my mind that sand is a natural resource. I'm certainly going to be...
That we should treasure.
Yeah, I'm certainly going to be looking at it in a different light. Perhaps a visit to a beach is in order, just, you know, for a little
while. Oh, that's just an excuse, Sumitra.
So, unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today's show. You can continue to share your thoughts with us, any thoughts at all. You tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Go by our Facebook page, BFM The Bigger Picture. Drop us a message. Let us know if there are any topics that intrigue you, that interest you, news stories that you've come across that you'd like for us to discuss. We'd be happy to hear from you. If you missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcasts from BFM.my, The Daily Digest, or from the BFM app, or on Spotify. Coming up on 3 p.m. on Front Row, Sharmila Ganesan will be speaking to Victor Chin about his watercolour paintings of straight settlement shop houses and how he sparks conversations about conservation through art. This has been The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. We're leaving you now with Love Letters in the Sand by Pat Boone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.